Okay, good. All right, take two. Good evening. Welcome to the Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency adjourned regular board meeting of April 10th, 2024. Just a little quick note about public participation. Public comments will be accepted in person at the meeting, or they may be submitted by email to vinagsapublic.comments@chicoca.gov. If you would like to address the board at this meeting, you are requested to complete a speaker card and hand it to the board clerk prior to the conclusion of the staff presentation for that item. A limit of 3 minutes per speaker on all items and an overall time limit of 30 minutes for agenda items has been established. With that, we will go to item 1.2, roll call. Linda Herman.
Thank you, Chair. Board Member Kimmelshue.
Here.
Board Member Doyle.
Here.
Vice Chair Boyer.
Here.
Chair Chasinski.
Here. And Director Reynolds is the absent person today. Item two is the approval of the consent agenda, which comprises the March 13th, I think 2024 or 2023 Vina GSA minutes is what it says, but I think we mean 2024. So sorry. Do we have any corrections or additions
two
or anything?
Two really nitpicky things. One, it says we started late, but then says we was at 5:30, which is when we were supposed to start. And we have a duplicate entry for Ann Dawson's appointment to the shack. I don't know if there was I can't remember if there was somebody else we had appointed as well. We did the ag members.
We did the ag members and then we did Ann. And that was it, I think. Yeah. Okay, so I think it was just a duplication on there. So I'd mentioned that to Dylan and she'll fix that. And I think we'd had some technical problems, which is why we kind of started late, even though we were all kind of here. But yeah, thank you for pointing out that inconsistency in the time.
Very nitpicky. Just evidencing that I actually read them.
Hey, cool. Well, do you want to make a motion?
Motion to approve with those edits.
Great. We have a motion to approve by Vice Chair Royer and a second by Board Member Doyle for approving with the corrections. Linda Herman.
Sure. Board Member Kimmelshue.
Yes.
Board Member Doyle.
Aye.
Vice Chair Royer. Chair Chasinski.
Aye. That passes 4-0. We will move on to public comments. Members of the public may address the board at this time on any matter not already listed on the agenda. Comments are limited to 3 minutes. The board cannot take any action at this meeting on requests made under this section of the agenda. Do we have any public comment requests?
We do. Jim Brobeck.
There we go. Hello, Mr. Brobeck. No music. You brought the guitar and I thought we were going to get serenaded, no?
Is his microphone on?
It's a good thing that we started. Okay, good. Yeah, now we can hear you. Perfect. Thank you.
The annual report indicates that the citizens of Chico, the ratepayers, have continued their extraordinary water conservation measures. They're still saving over 33%. They've reduced the demand on the aquifer by 33% since several years ago. And in spite of the increase of population of this town, they've been able to maintain that that low level of use. And I think the citizens of Chico deserve great praise and recognition for these conservation efforts.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Are there any other comments, Linda? Nope, just wanted to make sure. Great. We will move on. There's no notice public hearing, so we'll move on to item six, regular agenda 6.1, consideration of appointments to the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. Dylan Rainey.
All righty. I'm excited to be here for my first agenda item as your new GSA manager. So we're going to be starting with the consideration of appointments to the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, the SHAC. The Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency, GSA, receives input and recommendations on groundwater sustainability plan development and implementation from the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. The intent of the SHAC is to provide community perspective and participation in the groundwater or Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, SGMA implementation. Interested individuals apply to the GSA and the GSA board appoints at-large members to fill the SHAC seats. Beginning on September 6, 2023, the Vina GSA initiated a call for applications to fill 6 SHAC vacancies, adopting a rolling application process, which is explicitly stated on the Vina GSA website. As of March 13th, 2024, the board appointed three members to the committee. However, three positions remain vacant: the environmental representative, the business representative, and the non-irrigated rangeland representative. The Vina GSA has received one application from Mr. Bill Chance, who has applied for the business representative position. Upon review of Mr. Chance's application, he is eligible to serve on the SHAC. Instead of a four-year term, this position will expire in December 2025 to accommodate the recently adopted staggered terms in which half the SHAC would be appointed every 2 years. Currently, the GSA has not received applications for the remaining two positions, although staff has received potential inquiries from potential applicants. Staff would like to recommend and request that the board appoint to the business, make one appointment to the business representative seat with the term ending in 2025.
Great, thank you. Mr. Chance, you don't have to come up and speak, but if you'd like to come up and introduce yourself, you're free to do so.
I'm happy to answer questions.
Great, are there any questions for Mr. Chance? Nope. Are there any other comments on this item? Great, then I will entertain a motion.
I would move Bill Chance be appointed to the SHAC.
Great, is there a second?
Second.
Great. We have a motion from Director Kimmelshue, a second from Vice Chair Royer. At your pleasure, Linda.
Thank you. Board Member Kimmelshue?
Aye.
Board Member Doyle?
Aye.
Vice Chair Royer?
Aye.
Chair Chasinski?
Aye. So welcome aboard. Thank you for joining our service. We appreciate it. We will move on to 6.2, ratify letters of support for Butte County and Durham Irrigation District for Butte County's congressionally directed spending community project funding. Back to you, Dylan Raining.
Thank you, Chair Chudzinski. I'm excited to be here for my second agenda as your GSA manager.
By the way, we appreciate the tabs. She tabbed all of our things, so she's up in the game here. Go ahead for item number two, please.
All right. So
I'll say I suggested that.
It was a team effort. All righty. In front of you, we have the agenda item to ratify letters of support for Butte County and Durham Irrigation District, DID, for Butte County's congressional directed spending community project funding. Butte County requested a support letter from the Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency in support of its application for congressional funding. This funding pertains to the on-farm flood capture and recharge project aimed at enhancing both aquifer recharge operations and flood capture capabilities, therefore bolstering Butte's agricultural economy and contributing to the advancement of groundwater sustainability in the Vina subbasin. This project is consistent with the strategic initiatives highlighted in the Vina GSP, specifically the surface water supply and recharge feasibility study component. Similarly, DID, a member agency, sought a letter of support from the GSA for that the same congressional funding for their 1 million gallon water storage tank project. The proposal presented by DID highlights the urgent need to address challenges posed by aging infrastructure and aligns with the Vina GSP efforts to manage groundwater sustainability in areas showing critical decline. The localized groundwater depression in the Durham area, as noted in the GSP, illustrates the specific challenges faced by DID's service area. This condition, alongside the overall gentle gradient of the subbasin and its adjacency to the Sacramento River, accentuates the need for projects like DID's to ensure the effective management of our groundwater resources. Due to the urgency of the request, which preceded today's scheduled board meeting, staff verified the project's alignment with the Vina GSP. Then I, as the GSA manager, drafted the letters, which then were signed by Board Chair Chudzinski and is now pending ratification. Staff would like to recommend and request that the board ratify the letters of support for Butte County and Durham Irrigation District for Butte County's congressional directed spending community project funding.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions from board members? Seeing none, are there any public comments? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Or ratify.
Great, ratify. Perfect. Yes. So great, we have a motion to ratify from Vice Chair Royer and a second from Board Member Doyle.
Chair Tuchinski, I'd like to also add in, and because these letters were kind of late in coming, and this is the first time we've ever brought letters of support to be ratified by the board, that we wanted to make sure that that's the process that we would like to do in the future. Typically, when an organization or an agency wants a letter of support for a grant, the ideal thing would be that we draft a letter, the board reviews it, signs it, and then we send it off. But in this instance, because it essentially was a few days before these grants or these quote unquote earmark monies were being applied for, we did it this way. And I just wanted to make sure that that works for this board, bringing a letter in this way to be ratified, or is there, just to think that if there's a different process that we might want to do in the future, we could do that as well. Sometimes for the county, for example, if I can't bring it to the Board of Supervisors, I might draft it and sign it, make sure it complies with all of the goals and direction of the board, and then bring it to have it ratified in the similar way. So just wanted to throw that out there so that we don't kind of steer off in different directions as to what this board would like. So
great. I figured we would see how this vote goes. And if the vote goes positively for it, then we can see if that's how we want to keep moving forward. Does that work for you? Great. So Linda, why don't we conduct the roll call and then we can just address the item after the vote.
Do you want to make that part of the motion? No. Okay.
I don't think so. Let's just make it separate. So
okay.
Yes.
Just wanted to check.
Yeah. No, thank you for asking.
Sure thing. Board Member Kimmelshue?
Aye.
Board Member Doyle?
Aye.
Vice Chair Royer?
Aye.
Chair Tuchinski?
Aye. So that passes 4-0 to ratify it. And again, because it was consistent with our plan, I didn't feel it was too presumptuous for me as chair to sign, knowing that we were going to come back and ratify. So are we comfortable with that as a on these contingencies moving forward?
I don't have a problem with it. I think we have enough common sense in our chair and our management staff determine whether letters can be ratified or if they feel like they need to come before the board. So I think anytime you're asking for money, I think that just goes out as soon as you can get it. Right?
Yeah, great. Thank you. And I'm seeing nods. So I think
particularly when it's a member agency.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally could have called one of us, not violated the Brown Act, and said, are you cool with it? And you basically have your answer. But
yeah.
I don't think this should be a standard practice, but I don't have a problem with how this worked out.
Mm-hmm. Great. So did you get the guidance you needed? Great. Perfect. Thank you so much. We will now go to item 6.3, presentation of the 2023 Water Year Annual Report for the Vina Subbasin. We have with us Kelly Peterson, who will tee everything off.
Great. Thank you so much, Chair Tuchinski, members of the board. It's great to be back. I think it's been almost a full year since I've seen you, but I'm really excited to be back here. And before I turn it over to the team to talk about an overview presentation of the annual water report, I just wanted to say a few things. First, that this is our third annual report, which is pretty exciting since the GSP was submitted to DWR. It covers a period from a while ago, so we have to kind of put our mind back in October 1st of 2022. Up to September 30th of 2023 last year. So that was the water year that this annual report is covering. And you might see some new things in it this year. Over the years, we've been refining it and getting it better and better. DWR did come out with some guidance documents on annual reporting in about October of last year after we had about 2 or 3 months of work underway. So some of those are a reflection of that, one being a nice table where you'll see all the sustainability indicators and sort of the status of that. So it's a really easy, quick go-to. So you can see if there were any exceedances or kind of how we're doing in one quick shot, one table. You'll also see some new graphs regarding land subsidence. So that was another new incorporation. But the great thing about this report this year is that we started way earlier than last year. So we were on it before the water year even started. So working on it in August, and we were able to really vet some of the draft tables and the content through an open, transparent venue. So we used the Technical Advisory Committee of the Butte County Water Commission. And so it was a place where all the managers from all three subbasins could come and talk about all three at once. The public could come, board members, really anyone from the community that wanted to get a sense of, you know, what it's looking like to begin with, have some feedback, and kind of have that shaped moving forward. We do have a revised report as of this afternoon. We caught a mix up a couple days ago regarding the six corrective actions. So what you'll see at your dais is a one pager of that reflected language that just brings it up to more accurate levels. That's been submitted to the portal as of this afternoon, and it should be available on the Vina GSA website by tomorrow. But we're really excited to share all the good news and the work that's occurred over the last water year. But it really couldn't have happened without you in this leadership position, and I really want to call that out, as well as the work from the advisory committees. It's you know, it's a very important job. It's tireless and it's highly underpaid. So with that, you know, I just want to give you at least my gratitude for the work that you do, and turn it over to them to really get this exciting work underway.
Great. Just one quick question for you, Kelly. That'll give him a chance to walk up here. So it mentions at the very bottom that we address the corrective actions effectively through the periodic evaluation of the GSP, which is due on January 2027. So we are fully in compliance with these changes that are required, correct?
Absolutely. Okay. Yep. And that was specific language taken from the determination letter from DWR.
Okay, great. Thanks. I just wanted to double check. We had discussed that at the last meeting, but I just wanted to double check in the context of the report. So thank you.
Sure thing.
All right. Eddie Teasdale, welcome.
Good evening, everyone. So I'm just going to kind of jump straight into this and let you know where we're headed today. This is kind of a joint effort between not only, you know, county staff, but also Ludorf and Scalmanini, and also Jeff Davids with Davids Engineering. So we're going to be kind of tag teaming it, you know, here in the next 20 minutes or so. So where are we headed? So we're going to talk a little bit about an overview of sort of the hydrologic and water supply conditions in water year 2023. We're going to talk a little bit about groundwater conditions, and then we'll dive into water supply and water use, which is sort of rolled up into the water budget, and then, of course, progress towards GSP implementation. So on the requirements for annual reports, again, there wasn't any big changes that came out from this guidance documents that DWR had issued late last year. So again, it kind of dovetails on what I just talked about on the previous slide. But what we have heard from DWR this year, you know, this is the third report that would be submitted to DWR, and we haven't received any feedback. We've heard this year that they will be providing feedback on the annual report. So not sure when that's going to happen or what that's going to look like, but it's, you know, it would be nice to see how we're doing or not doing, kind of depending on the feedback. So that is going to happen this year, is what I've heard. So you all are more familiar with this than most, but just again, to set the table a little bit, you know, where are we, where we come from? So again, you know, GSAs were formed in 2016, 2017. Was when we started the process of developing the GSPs themselves. Those were submitted to DWR back in 2022. And then again, there's been several reports. There's the, you know, 2021 water year report, 2022, and now here we are in 2023. And then, you know, every 5 years, so the next one is in 2027. So the first one is sort of a GSP update that's required. And so I think we're on track. Again, we're ideally trying to get out to 2042 and be sustainable as we've kind of detailed in the GSP. So specific to 2023 water year conditions, according to DWR, we were above average. So actually we're a wet year. That's a good thing. So water year 2023, I think the cumulative precipitation was about 66 inches. 2022, just for some perspective, was about 43 inches. So, you know, 21 inches more than we had in 2022. And then on average, you know, the cumulative precipitation is about 53 inches. So again, we're well above that. And you can kind of see we've got some, let's see, a hydrograph here that shows the cumulative departure on precip versus, you know, this is October through water year, October 1 through October 1, or actually through September 30th. And you can kind of see, you know, this is kind of where we are today, or actually on the water year 2023 report. So again, we're above average. I'm not sure how current this is, but as of today, we're around 44 inches. So we're probably, you know, looking at maybe an average kind of year this year. So we'll see. We're where we're headed. So let me just fast forward here. So I gotta make sure I'm on the right slide because Jeff's gonna be coming up here in a second. So give me 2 seconds. All right. So an overview regionally, where are we? Total annual precipitation is about 141% of historical averages. So that's great. Reservoir storages are about 128% of historical averages. That's great. And then snowpack is 247% of historical averages. So again, that's great. And then, specific to unimpaired flows, again, we're above average, 136%. And then on the Sacramento River settlement contract, it's the surface water availability, there's 100% of the allocations were allowed last year. So all in all, it's good news. Precipitation was up last year. And as a result, and Jeff will talk a little bit about this, water levels are up, groundwater storage is up, bathtub is fuller than it was, a couple of years ago. So it's all kind of good news. Kind of diving into groundwater conditions. So again, specifically for the Vianna Subbasin, we're utilizing 17 RMS wells, and that's a combination of domestic irrigation and specifically observation wells. And then that information is utilized to calculate the groundwater storage, right? So we've got the water level of data that kind of shows you how water levels change within the bathtub, so to speak. And then you can estimate the volumes, which is the storage change based on those RMS wells. This is my last slide for a few secs here. So just a map that shows or illustrates where those representative monitoring wells are. Those are the green dots that you can see on your screen. We've got 6 in the Vina North management area. We've got 5. We've got 5 sort of in the Chico management area. And then we've got 6 in the RMS well, in the South management area. Just like the previous couple of slides, we didn't have any wells that sort of fell below the MOs or actually even the MTs, as to be expected, right? We got more precip, we got more snowpack. So it's, again, good news, at least for last year.
Just explain what MOs and MTs are, just real quickly.
Yeah, so measurable objectives, that's sort of the ideal condition. That's where we want to be. And then the minimum threshold is what we want to avoid. So your MO is your ideal weight. Your MT is not what you is where your doctor doesn't want you to go.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right. So with that, I'm going to pause. I'm going to turn it over to Jeff. He's going to cover a couple of slides, and then I'll be back.
All right. Thank you, Eddie. Yeah. Good afternoon. I don't think I've had the pleasure of speaking before the board here, so I appreciate the opportunity. And Eddie was kind enough to give me the data rich slides. So I'm kind of a data junkie. So I'm really happy to be able to dive into those. What we're looking at here in this particular thing is really communicating 4 different pieces of information. And I'll start with kind of what jumped off the page, which is the colors. And the colors represent over this 24-year period, basically the water year types. So the reds and the oranges and the yellows represent a below normal condition. And the green and the blue represent an above normal condition. With the blues being the wet. So like Eddie just said, thankfully the 2023 water year was actually a wet water year in terms of its classification. If you kind of do a thin slice of the data, I think what you can see is there's more yellows and reds than there are greens and blues, right? And if you count it up, it's about 2/3 that are below normal and 1/3 above normal. So that's the first thing that jumps off the slide to me, is that we're in a dry period, right? Relative to whatever we call normal here in California for precipitation, which is a tough one. So the next piece of information we can jump into is really the black trace that's up on the top there. That's in relation to the left axis, and that represents the estimated amount of groundwater extraction for each of those years. So you can see it kind of bumps up during the dry years, the red years. You see that groundwater extraction bumps up. There's less precip available for the crops, so you have to pump more, and then it bumps down in the wet years where you have more precip. And that swing is something on the order of like 50 to 100,000 acre feet of variation, depending on precip. But it bumps between 200 and 300,000 acre feet for the subbasin. We do see that the 2023 water year estimate is right on the order of about 240,000 estimated acre feet of groundwater extraction. Which is, higher than other wet years, but it's right in the kind of the range of expected values. So the next thing that we can look at basically is this, the blue bars here, and those are in relation to the right axis there. And that represents for any given year, whether there was an increase in storage in the aquifer or a decrease in storage in the aquifer. So if it's above that zero line, which is the middle line, the graph, it means that water levels in general went up and there was an increase in storage. And if the bar is below, why then water levels went down, there's a decrease in storage. And again, follows the wet, dry year periods, right? So thankfully, 2023 was a bar that was above zero, about 70,000 acre feet of estimated increase in storage. That's good news. The bad news is, though, is that finally this fourth piece of data, if you kind of follow the dashed black line, that basically represents taking each of those bars and kind of putting them heads to tail, right? So you're getting this cumulative sense of what's happening. And over this 24-year period, from a cumulative sense, there's been a decrease in storage of right around 500,000 acre feet. I think it's something like 470,000 acre feet. So, you know, that's the thing to keep our eye on, right? And is that because of climate? Because two-thirds of the years are below normal precip? Is it because of changes in demand? You know, the science is kind of out on that still. But this is something that, you know, I think you all are obviously paying close attention to. So that's, I'm happy to pause there if there's any questions on that, but jump into the next slide. There's kind of a lot going on in this, so wanted to take my time to get through that, but keep going.
I'm seeing no questions, okay. So I think we're good.
So it could be said that the decline in available water or water in our aquifer, the reasons could be twofold. Could be overuse of the aquifer and also lack of being in a drought type time of the in these last 20 years.
Yeah, and I think that's right.
So it's what I'm saying. I'm trying to find what's causing that.
Exactly.
Those are the two things that I see as causing it.
Those are the two primary things. And of course, if you were in a different subbasin, you'd be looking at surface water reliability, right? Because that has a big driver, for example, in the Clusa subbasin. If you get a 0% allocation for the Tama-Clusa Canal, you know, that can have a huge impact on groundwater declines. But, you know, the Vina subbasin has relatively stable surface water rights off of Butte Creek, and those don't change a lot from year to year. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of part of the equation is relatively stable. So, yeah, so I'd say those are the two knobs that you're kind of looking at to try to figure out what's going on.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so moving forward, this next slide here really just summarizes that 70,000 acre foot change for water year 2023 that we saw in that blue bar on the previous slide. This shows spatially where that actually occurred. Okay, so if we look at the map on the right there, basically each of the RMS wells, these representative monitoring site wells that Eddie talked about, are represented by the blue dots on this map figure. And if we have a spring measurement for that well from the prior spring, and we have a spring measurement from the current spring, we can do this kind of change in water level across that water year, spring to spring. It's not actually technically the water year, but it's a spring to spring change. If the water level goes up, these polygons are colored blue. If the water level goes down, they're colored red. And if they're kind of stable, then it's just sort of colored as white. And you can see that on the scale bar off to the right. The scale of those colors is between negative 15,000 acre feet and positive 15,000 acre feet. So what jumps out to me from this slide is basically the wells that are responding to a wet year are the ones that are closest to the surface water features. Like, it is what jumped out to me. So you have the Sacramento River, of course, bounding on the western side, and you have Big Chico Creek and Butte Creek flowing through that center portion. And those are the wells that, you know, bumped up. The other wells that are a little bit more distant, you know, show a slower change or response to the wet water year. So that's really the main points here. We do see, increases on the order of about 5 feet in the spring. And then if you do a fall to fall comparison, there's about a 4 foot increase. So good news in both the spring and the fall. I think those are the highlights from this slide here.
So this doesn't, and I'm sorry, I'm probably going to ask you a lot of questions. So
I am, that's the largest form of flattery.
Okay. From my Great. So does this slide, can you tell where recharge is taking place by these well levels? Or is that, you know, we've got people that say recharge takes place up in the foothills. Some people say recharge takes place down in the valley. Is there any way of telling where recharge takes place, or is that hasn't even been determined yet?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'd say that this will not tell you like, oh, it's like Fifth Avenue, you know, and
yeah.
You know, so it's not like that type of like address specific, but it's kind of like, Yeah, Athindi's region seems to be where we see a responsiveness in the aquifer to a wet year, for example. And I think, again, it's the blue places that, excuse me, are basically showing that response. Again, I think the conclusion would be that the polygons that are that dark blue are the ones that had wells that really had a bigger increase in groundwater levels and likely are at least close to where recharge is occurring on a short-term time scale.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be recharge that's still sort of happening, right? Because the time scales of these processes can be long. But certainly these wells seem to be responding within a calendar year, you know, to a wet year.
Okay. Thank you.
And that kind of goes with what I wanted to ask too. It relates. The rangeland owners that are part of our sub-basin who we're engaging with talk about the recharge that happens on their properties. This graphic wouldn't necessarily suggest that. What I'm gathering from you, though, for correct me if I'm wrong, is that you're talking about where the changes is the most pronounced as opposed to necessarily where recharge is happening. Did I understand you correctly?
That's right. And it's certainly possible that that water moves laterally and affects a different well, right, once it actually enters into the subsurface. So it's not as easy as, like, this is where it's happening, but these are the wells that we see responses. And those upland wells, you know, we don't see as big of a response, but yeah.
And I was just going to add too that what we're seeing here is a change between a spring to a spring level. So it may not be necessarily input from precipitation and or recharge and or surface water, but it could be that we just didn't pump as much. We were in a drought in 2021 or 2022 and 2023. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a need to pump as much water. So there's sort of that as part of this discussion, I think, too, to think about.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Kelly, for adding. I mean, we always have to be thinking about both the supply side and the demand side, and both of those knobs affect what we're looking at, right? So I think Kelly's really correct to point out that the demand knob was also turned because of the increased supply from Mother Nature in terms of precip. So,
right. Yeah. And again, not drawing an overly precipitous, forgive the pun, conclusion based on looking at this and saying, oh, well, it looks like the metro area is, you know, where we're getting recharge and the rangeland area is just kind of holding constant, right? But that's not exactly what this chart indicates. So
that's right. Yeah, you couldn't say, oh, it's all this nice permeable pavement we have because we have potholes in the city. Right? You wouldn't want to say that that's what's causing recharge or something like that. But
yeah, and the reason I ask that is because, as you know, per our plan, our GSP, we're trying to do recharge. We're going to try and do recharge. And what I'm trying to find out, and maybe we can't, I'm sure there's a way to do it scientifically, is where is the best place to do recharge?
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know that we have that figured out yet, but that's why I was interested in the recharge situation.
Yeah. Well, and there's really cool technologies. I'm sure you all have heard about the airborne electromagnetic surveys and that sort of thing. You can't do that in urban areas, so there's certain limitations to the data sets, but there's kind of analogs that you can basically tow something behind a vehicle and do the similar mapping of the subsurface. And when you get down to thinking about projects, you know, that's the type of exploratory work you want to be doing to understand the subsurface and connectivity vertically and also horizontally. And so this is a very coarse perspective, but the geology, you know, makes sense. That's where all the sands and gravels are from the alluvial deposits of these streams along the Sacramento River and along, you know, Big Chico Creek and Butte Creek. And that's where we see this responsiveness.
I'll just add real quickly too to respond to your comment, Todd. there was a 2018 recharge report that was developed in concert with our department and David's Engineering that actually has some great maps on recharge areas just for field flooding versus right off the, you know, areas that are closer to surface water conveyance, that type of thing. So I'll make sure to get that into your mailbox. Also, the recharge feasibility is part of the projects that were just funded. So that's coming online too. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks. I didn't mean to keep asking questions, but I probably will.
No. Yeah. So again, all good from my side. Sorry, Eddie, for taking too much time here. Okay, so basically this is just a tabular summary. I think there was a clarifying question about the, you know, what's an MO, and basically the MO is kind of that target, the measurable objective of, you know, where the GSP set the desired water levels moving forward. That's again what we're aiming for. These are the 17 RMS wells, and basically for both the spring of 23 and the fall of 23, we have basically the difference from the MO to the actual water level, and a positive value means that it's above the MO, which is good news, right? It's closer to the land surface. That means it's above, and that means that, you know, while we're seeing declines, we're still above the MOs. So that's kind of the punchline of this. And it's on the order of what, you know, 5 to almost, you know, over 30 feet in some cases above that measurable objective. So that's all good news. This is a real kind of high level summary of the groundwater extraction. We've already seen the number that 240 was on the plot, you know, that we started with all the colors. It represents the estimated total groundwater extraction, but this just breaks it down in a little bit more detail. So we know, okay, how much of that 240 was from agricultural pumping? That estimated value is about 220,000 acre feet for that. How much is, to Jim Brobeck's point, you know, how much is from the city of Chico? That's on the order of 22,000 acre feet. How much is from rural residential communities? And then further breaking that down to, okay, we know there is some surface water that's used within the subbasin. And so we have the diversions for Durham Mutual Water Company and also the Rancho Escuan. And so that's what that 27,000 acre feet is off of from Butte Creek. And that kind of highlights some opportunities as well, is like, you know, conjunctive use, right? Use more of that surface water in lieu of pumping groundwater, right? That's an opportunity. That's mm-hmm. a project that is being investigated as part of the Prop 68 grant funds. And then you have the acreage finally on the far right column. You know, the number that I always want to compute when I look at these data is how many acre feet per acre is this volume, right? So normalize it by area so that you get a depth that you can compare. And for agriculture, you take the 220 divided by the 75, it's about 3 acre feet per acre of estimated groundwater extraction. It's really in the, if you farm, you know that that's a pretty reasonable number given a wet year. You know, in a dry year, it might be something like 3.5 or 4, but this is a pretty reasonable number. All right.
So 3 is close. Yeah. Yeah.
Seems high and above average year.
Hmm. I think you guys are using too much on your farm.
Vice Chair Royer was just kind of musing out loud. He didn't have his mic hit. He was musing okay. out loud about whether that number was high or not. And so he was just kind of, he's a nut farmer. So he's okay. just kind of penciling in his head that way. So
just it sure. seems high on an above normal year.
Yeah, and I mean, that's good feedback. And, you know, we can, in the next slide, actually, I'll jump into a little bit of the methodology, because of course, this number, we don't have flow meters, right, on every well that's extracting water, and nor would I suggest that that's a good idea. You know, so we have to have different methods. So we're actually looking at the consumption of water from crops using satellite imagery. So, and then kind of backing into based on that and the contribution from rainfall, how much must have been delivered via a well to meet that crop consumption we're seeing from remote sensing. So the methods have their uncertainties, but it really gets you into the order of magnitude. And I think it's a useful kind of repeatable tool, but certainly, you know, needs refinement over time. So this is the power of having these data spatially, is that you can actually make a simple map like this using these remotely sensed data. So every pixel we have, and a pixel represents an area about the size of an infield for a baseball diamond. So it's about 100 feet by 100 feet, 30 meters, 30 meters. And every pixel that we see represents an estimated amount of groundwater pumping for that pixel. And so you can kind of see the distribution in the cross space, just in qualitative sense from low to high, and kind of see the different orchards jumping out and some of the rice ground that's actually in the south east there. And again, these are, you know, these would not be like something that you would perfectly hang your hat on and say, oh, you must have pumped exactly this amount, but it kind of gets you close with the methodology, and you can see the field by field variability mm-hmm. there. Eddie, I think
go back to that. I'm sorry. Go back to that slide. Yeah.
I thought with the Kimmel, so maybe we'd have some questions.
Yeah, I figured that, you know. So it's safe to say that obviously most of the irrigation in the Vina subbasin takes place west of
west of Highway 99.
That's right.
And so there's very little pumping in the eastern portion, foothills.
That's right. That's right. And this is really driven, you know, thanks to, I believe, a member of your family, you know, this is driven by a good sense of land use, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, one of the first things we do when we process these data is to constrain groundwater pumping down to the areas that we know are underneath agricultural protection.
Okay.
And so that basically jumped out from a land use perspective, and then it you know, further manifests in this groundwater extraction map, being almost everything except for just a few north of town, you know, being on the west side of 99.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yep, you got it. All right. Well, I think thank you for your time. I appreciate the conversation. Eddie, back to you. Thanks for letting me have the day as well.
Yeah. Now we'll get back to what's the next slide. It's just a list of texts. Yeah, great. So highlights on 2023. Obviously, the annual report's completed. Was submitted, I think, actually a little early. So that's great. What else has been happening? You're well aware of this. There's been some discussions or some progress made on sort of developing a property-related fee. That's in the works. Then as far as the grant program proposal, that again, this was submitted in fall 2022. That was fully funded. So that's great. That's going to open up some resources to develop some of these projects and or management actions that I'm going to cover here in a second. Specific to some of the AEM data, this is the helicopter that was kind of flying around that Jeff had mentioned previously. That was completed in the summer of 2022. Specific to the sustainability indicators, so this is the MOs and the MTs, the measurable objectives, the minimum thresholds, all in compliance, no indication of undesirable results, which is great. And then there's been progress made on completing 10 projects and management actions since the last annual report.
I have a quick question for you, and this may be a Kelly question. It could even be an absentee Christina question. How is what we're finding in these annual reports dovetailing with assumptions that we made when modeling for our GSP? Are we in line with the things that we anticipated seeing in the wet years and the dry years that we punched in? Or are we seeing that we might need to do any kind of adjustments?
I think Christina's online, so we'll just kind of
punt
that question.
Oh, great. Hi, Christina.
Hopefully she's there.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, did you hear my question?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yeah, I would say just in terms of the general trends that Jeff talked about, and you know, groundwater pumping estimates coming down in wetter years, and groundwater levels going up on the order of an average of 5.5 feet. I think both of those are kind of points that are in line with what we've seen before and what we might expect. So that's my short answer to your question. I think there's always more to better understand, but yeah, I think nothing's kind of out of what we might expect at this point.
Great, thank you so much. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, hi.
Thanks, Eddie, go ahead, please.
Yep, keep going. Okay, and then I think Jim had mentioned this previously, you know, GSPs were submitted, and then you've got, I think it was July 2023, received good news that the Vina GSP was approved, but there was, you know, six recommendations that the DWR had kind of included in their corrective action, there were corrective actions that they wanted to see. And so we've listed those six here. Again, they're in the annual report as well. I'm not gonna read through them, but the good news is that the Sigma grant that was funded is going to help support addressing all of those six, I don't wanna call them deficiencies, but the corrective actions that are required, recommendations. So that's good news. Just some other kind of related projects. So again, a lot of these are being funded through that Prop 68 grant. I guess I could read through all these or just give you a few minutes to kind of to digest them if there's any questions. But again, you can sort of see there's the project, the current status, and then some of the progress since the last annual report. We've heard from DWR that, you know, as part of their review process of the annual reports, You know, they want to see what progress is being made. So they don't want to just see sort of empty promises in one annual report and not seeing follow through in the next annual report. So again, I think it's great to see that, you know, because of the funding, we can start to move some of these projects forward.
Great. Were there any questions from board members about the PMAs? Oh, okay, great. Thanks, Eddie.
Just a general summary. So again, we mentioned, you know, water year 2023, above average precipitation, stream flows, bathtubs full. So what does that mean? Groundwater levels are up from last year, and everything is above the MO, like the measurable objective, like Jeff had mentioned in a previous slide. As far as groundwater extraction, it was less than the 22 year average, but more than the average of the last 4 years. Not significantly, but it was. Recognizing there's some error or uncertainty in some of these analyses that we're doing too. So, and as Jeff had mentioned, you know, even though the bathtub is full this year, you know, cumulative groundwater storage is still down from about 475,000 acre feet from 2000.
I want to ask you about, you used the term a few times about the bathtub being full. Are you simply referring to this year's allotment being over, you know, this year's precipitation and recharge being over the normal? Because again, it would seem to me that our bathtub isn't full if we are lower, you know, if it's not all the way up to the brim. So would you just, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm simply just trying to get the clarification of what exactly we're meaning when we're saying the bathtub is full.
It's full compared to previous years, I guess the drought year. So water levels are up.
I think you're spot on with that though. It's certainly not full. It's a 475,000 acre foot deficit at this point, cumulatively since 2000. So we have a lot of work to do to get it up to that level line at the zero mark, you know, to where we can then, you know, account for dry years and wet years. But I think you're spot on with that.
Great, thanks. Yes. So we're not quite relaxing in our tub and luxuriating in the bubbles yet. So right. That's what I just want to think. Great, thank you.
But the good news is the sub-basin is on track, you know, meeting the milestones, and no indications of any undesirable results.
Great.
Does Sigma require us to get back to 2000?
No.
So why do we keep using this number?
It doesn't require us to get back to 2000, but when we're looking at cumulative effects, what we want to do is have a spot where we can say, okay, in dry years, we expect levels to decrease, and in wet years, we expect them to recover. But at this point, it would take us about 6.5 years of conditions that we saw last in that water year, in that wet water year, back to back to get up to that zero point. Mm. So just to give you some scale of, you know, the long-term declines that have...
As an agency, though, what are we managing to? We're not managing to recover 475,000 acre feet. That's not what the law is requiring. We're managing to,
I would say, to our measurable objectives, which are clearly outlined with the SMC. And so right now, those levels are higher, but we need to account for those excess and upcoming future dry years as well too. So saying that being at the MO is okay in a wet year necessarily, I think we need to do better than that, if that makes sense.
What I'm getting at is I think it's a slippery slope if we keep putting up here that, oh, we're 475,000 acre feet down, when that isn't what the agency has been charged by the law to do to recover that. And I think it starts setting an expectation to folks hearing these presentations that somehow we are trying to manage to recover that.
And I'll probably toss it over here to Christina to weigh in. I do know that, you know, we've identified a sustainable year yield per year of about 10,000 acre feet per year. So that's one way of gauging it. But I think probably to answer your question, Christina might do a better job of it.
Okay.
Christina, back.
I was just going to add that I think that, and maybe someone can help me with this, the annual report reporting does require that very colorful graph to include a certain number of years. Maybe it's only a minimum of 10. Maybe someone can, either Eddie or Jeff, know off the top of their head. But so
a minimum of 10.
Minimum of 10. Okay. So we're going to be reporting out from some starting point. kind of cumulative change in that graph. I think we've chosen 2000 as a reasonable kind of starting spot because in the longer term trends that we've seen, you know, things declined in the 90s during the drought. We had five wet years of the late 90s and things kind of came up and recovered. So 2000 is kind of more of a full bathtub. If we've seen something like that before and you want to call it that condition, it's around what conditions were like in 2000 plus or minus. And so it's true that is kind of using up more of a full basin as a starting point just to gauge kind of where things are at compared to that. And you're right, the GSP doesn't call out as the policy, you know, for the agency to manage to get everything back up to that. But that's, I guess maybe I'll just stop there and see if there's a follow-up question. But I think that's partly why we're reporting it out that way, is just providing that as kind of a starting point, reference point.
And we sort of used that longitudinal history when we were figuring out where we wanted to put our MOs and our MTs. And we also took into effect climate change, how that might affect the modeling. So in other words, this longitudinal history, perhaps to year 2000, it literally was what we kind of based our thinking on, correct?
Yeah, I would say that's correct. And I think it just gives an idea of what kind of, you know, positives and negatives we've seen over that 20 years and how we might expect. It allows us to kind of see our in this new year of data, is it in line with what we would expect? Having that longer 20-year period of history helps us to kind of gauge that. So maybe we just need to be more precise in how we talk about, you know, why we're looking at a longer period of time rather than emphasizing, you know, how far down the hole we are. I don't know.
And I am not trying to say that we shouldn't be looking at the long-term trends in any way, shape, or form. I'm saying the way that we're presenting this in the report, so, right, is implying that we are trying to make up for something that is not in the plan. Right. And so that's a setup to fail. So either we need to amend the plan and say somehow we're going to recapture 475,000 acre feet, which takes us back 4 years in terms of the discussions and debates. Perhaps there's a different way of representing it.
I just pulled up the regulations too, and it does say to the greatest extent available. So looking at that cumulative change to historic data on the greatest extent available, including from 2015 to the current reporting year. So that might be one way of capturing it a little bit differently.
Yes, if you put it in perspective, just for a positive note, in 2015 is when, you know, Sigma was implemented. It gave you the teeth to do maybe more management. I mean, it was, the deficit was about 436, mm-hmm, and then today we're at 476. So it's about a 40,000 acre foot deficit in 2015.
An easier time being held accountable when the law, yeah, went into effect. And yeah, as a state, we said, hey, we're putting a line in the sand,
right,
versus going back in time. I'm not saying don't present the data. I think the long-term data is great for us to be looking at. I think it's exceedingly informative, but we keep seeing numbers like, you know, 475,000, right, to refill something that we have not been charged with refilling. So I'll get off my soapbox.
No, and I think, and if I heard Kelly right, our kind of our goal is to gain back 10,000 acre feet a year. Is that right? Does that make sense? Which you, is that, no, no.
That's the yield. So that's the Vina GSA decided as a board was the amount of yield or the amount of groundwater extractions that could occur within a year and still be sustainable. Is that
right? It's more of a net loss number, right?
That's right. But
go ahead, please, Christina. Sorry.
The 10,000 acre feet per year, was the difference, right, between the average pumping that was estimated and the long-term average and the sustainable yield. And so, yeah, to flatten out this downward trend line, you're looking at, you know, 10,000 acre feet per year or so. I mean, you could also look at this trend line as more like a 20,000 acre foot per year downward trend. So just to flatten it out, we need to kind of reduce on the order of 10 to 20,000 acre feet per year.
Go ahead.
Oh, so I'm sorry, Christina. I also wanted to note that Valerie Kincaid, legal counsel, has a comment as well.
Oh, great. Thanks. Yeah, I don't have my full screen here showing everybody's hands. So no, that's okay. I'll forgive you this time. Okay. Thank you.
I have a new Surface Pro, so next time we'll have two and you can have it back.
Woohoo. Okay. Hi, Valerie.
Hi. I just maybe wanted to weigh in and try to clarify. I think from what I'm hearing board member, I think it's Royer, talk about are we telling a story about how close we are to our goal? And I think that's one of the stories we have to tell by law in the annual report. And I think the confusion's coming from, are we talking about getting back to 2000 levels? And I agree that I don't think that's our goal. That's not our MO. So I think what he's looking for is, are we on track this year to meet an MO, and are we good this year, but we're still far off in other year, you know, in long-term MO. And I know that that sometimes is based on an RMS, you know, well by well, you know, it could differ by well and by representative monitoring well. But I think what he's saying is, let's not talk about a measuring stick that we're not using. So I think what I'm hearing, and it makes sense to me, and obviously he can correct me if I'm wrong here, is he wants to see, you know, how are we doing relative to our goal, not relative to a finish line way beyond our goal. So I don't know if that helps, but that's what I'm hearing. And I get the sense that I would also like to know, like, are we trending towards the goal? Are we right on target? Have we hit the MOs? Or are we not trending in that direction? And it sounds like the MOs are not the 2000 level in our RMSs. So
stated hopefully that far more eloquently than I was able to. So thank you, Valerie.
Perfect. Okay, great. Eddie?
Last slide. Yeah, just really, this is just, you know, again, based on the annual report summary, you know, there's a lot of good work that's been done, but there's work that needs to happen. So there's you know, a couple of items here that have been addressed, obviously reducing groundwater demand and increasing conservation activities, increasing groundwater recharge, you know, that's been a priority for the county. Obviously increased surface water supplies if and when they're available. And then, you know, obviously land use management in specific areas. And as always, the GSA has been very proactive in, you know, not only the GSP implementation through grants and outreach, but also funding. So again, these are messages that we want to include. We have included in the annual report to let DWR know. We're recognizing there's work to be done, but we're being very active.
Great.
And I think with that, there's some acknowledgements on the screen. I won't thank ourselves, but obviously Butte County well owners, your staff, county staff has been tremendously helpful, as has the technical advisory committee. So I think with that, thank you. And we'll see you next year.
Thanks, Eddie.
Yeah.
I had a question for either Eddie or Jeff. Just a couple quick questions. The one, I don't know who's in charge of the PowerPoint.
I can do it.
Okay. Can you go back to the one that we go back to 2000 and it shows all the bars? One of the first ones that Jeff, there it is. How much further can we go back on that? I mean, do you have stats or data to go back to as far as 1980, 1970? I mean, I know that doesn't, I know that would take some time to do or whatever. I guess what I'm getting at again is the question I asked at the very beginning, is this deficit due to the climate, rainfall, or is it due to overpumping our aquifer? And right. So, you know, back when people like myself and Bill Chance were in high school, it seemed like we got a lot more wet years than we do now. I mean, it always rained during football season and never does now. So I'm just curious to see that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And what I'm going to do to try to answer that is maybe go to this slide and then we'll go back. So basically, again, what you need to be able to do this analysis to get this change in storage is have a pair of measurements separated by year in the same well. And some of these wells, if you look at the hydrocaps, they go back to the 60s, thankfully. Like, mm-hmm. Thank goodness for the people who had some foresight to start measuring these water levels. And unfortunately, you know, that wasn't all over the place, but we have some limited places. So basically in those wells that we have data back to the 60s, and I think some even go to the 50s, we could do this change analysis, but the polygons that you'll see in the map are going to be like, you might only have two wells for the whole subbasin to try to map the change in storage. Is that representative? Probably not. Even having 17, there's like, we're covering big swaths of area. You know, 20,000 acres per each well is what we're kind of, you know, extrapolating across. So you can do it. We have the data, you know, back into the 60s. And, you know, I certainly can poke at that and kind of get back to you with what that looks like. You know, boy, when you start asking that question of, you know, what's causing the declines that we're seeing, I do think you need to keep the idea that it could be a combination of both, right? It could be both of these knobs kind of turning at the same time that are causing.
Yeah, and you could show irrigated agriculture back in the 1960s, and it wasn't as much as irrigated agriculture is now.
That's right.
I know we've plateaued on irrigated agriculture in Butte County and in the Vina subbasin.
Right.
So that part hopefully does not change.
Yeah, in the footprint's future. Filled out.
Yeah, the footprint.
All the Vina loam is taken up.
Yeah, there probably won't be any more irrigated agriculture created. That's probably
right. That's right.
So
yeah,
and then the other question is, these water levels in these test wells, mm-hmm. would you consider those more water levels for an agricultural well, or would you consider them for a domestic well? Because one of the issues that we've run into, and justifiably so by domestic users, is the drawdown by agricultural wells is affecting their domestic wells.
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm saying is we just had a Board of Supervisor meeting yesterday, and we talked about a drought action plan that we've got, and there's still some dry wells, domestic wells in Butte County. So, I mean, I know I'm talking all over the place, but where are these water levels that we're talking about?
Yeah. And this is, I don't know if we want to go fully into the rabbit hole here, but it's a really important question. But the story of these water levels in these wells is really driven by where the well is perforated into the aquifer, right? So that's basically, you have the solid well casing, and then at a certain moment you have the spots where it allows mm-hmm. the water from the aquifer to come into the well. And that can be in one spot. It can be over a series of multiple spots. And I think really each of these wells has a different set of perforations. And we actually have that on the hydrographs, but it's a little bit hard to kind of have a one size fits all answer. Basically, we would need to get out the hydrographs and look at the perforations and then start saying, okay, is this where domestic wells are perforated? Is it representative of what those wells might be experiencing? And it's really kind of like a very focused analysis mm-hmm. at that point. And Eddie, I don't know if you want to add anything to that, but yeah.
Yeah,
he's the real hydrogeologist.
He's the expert. Yeah. So, because that's the question that we get asked, and are you looking out for the domestic well users? And that's a justifiable question. That's a legitimate question. We should be doing that.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering how representative these water level gauges are to domestic wells.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'd say the canary in the coal mine for domestic wells really is are there domestic wells that are being impacted, you know, and keeping really good tabs of the reporting of that spatially, and knowing the construction of those wells, how deep are they? You know, that's the information, that data set that you would need to really have a good sense of domestic well kind of sensitivity or sort of the liability potentially of a change in water level impacting domestic wells.
Right. And, you know, some of the domestic wells that were drilled 50, 60 years ago, or maybe 70, 80 feet, 100 feet. And I was talking to a domestic well driller now, and he said he rarely goes less than 200 feet down to drill a domestic well. So,
yeah.
All right. Sorry about the around the
no.
crazy question, but we get concerns, like I said, and they're legitimate concerns from domestic well users. So
yeah, absolutely. No, all really important questions.
Yeah.
And I think if I could steal maybe 20 seconds to sort of respond, I think, to your really good question and also to Valerie's, is basically, if we go back to this slide, and I think Cammie, you were even pointing at it, I just wanted to kind of highlight this. This is the slide that tells the story, right, of how you're doing relative to your targets. And the fact that all these numbers are positive means that you're above the targets, right? The other slide, the way I interpret this is giving you like the long-term trajectory in the fact that you're probably actually year by year, all else being equal, going to be getting closer to those MOs over time. That's what this slide is telling you. It's not necessarily saying you have to recover 475,000 acre feet. It's just saying that if the trend continues, you're going to get closer to those MOs over time. So that's you know, I think the important thing that you guys should.
Unless we do something to correct it.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. And we have Cami.
I just wanted to check in with Christina. I noticed her hand was raised. I don't know if you had something to add, Christina, or if that's an old hand.
Yeah, I was just going to briefly add to the question about, you know, how far back could this graph go? To add to what Jeff said, we also have estimates from the Butte Basin groundwater model, and the model goes back to 1970. Obviously, data quality gets more blurry as you go back in time, but so we have more confidence in estimates kind of post 1990 or so. But, you know, we do have both through the monitoring data and through estimates and modeling data, some longer periods of time to try to understand these trends. And that's one of the reasons we kind of conclude that 2000 is kind of where things leveled off again after previously being, you know, going through highs and lows. And then secondly, to the domestic well point, I just wanted to mention that as part of the grant funded work, we are looking at, you know, data gaps and additional monitoring locations. And so that certainly is part of the consideration there is asking that question of how representative are these wells and are there additional wells that we should add to the network or monitor as well?
I will also add to that, as the county will be updating its drought plan per SB 552, which has some requirements to look at risk vulnerability to domestic wells. So all of these things will eventually tie together a little bit, and we'll be able to utilize information from the GSA's work with the SGMA projects, as well as what the county needs to analyze to comply with recent legislation.
Great.
And one more, I'm really getting in the weeds here now. It would be interesting to know how many wells that there were. I don't know if that's the data we have, you know, back in 2000 to 1990 or whenever. And just to see if there's correlation between how many wells there were. I mean, they could be domestic. I'm sure there's a lot more domestic wells as well and in the last 30 years. So.
Actually, I think, you know, we should probably have it, but I seem to recall Mr. Brobeck at one of our workshops showing us the time-lapse video.
I think, Jim, you did have that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a video that was put together by data that shows quite a dramatic expansion.
Please feel free to stand up. Yeah, I was going to ask for public comment soon, but this doesn't count. Go ahead, please answer.
Of agriculture wells in the footprint of irrigation districts that were preparing for inevitable cutbacks. So that is a significant increase in the agricultural demand, not just in Butte County, but in Colusa County and Glenn County. So that needs to be taken into consideration. Even if the agricultural footprint hasn't expanded, the number of deep wells that have gone in has expanded to prepare for the inevitable cutbacks of surface water supply.
Great.
Thank you.
And yeah, I was going to also say, let's put a pin in the domestic well discussion, the dry well discussion, because it does come up in the next report. So we can put a pin in it. But first, I wanted to open up for public comment, and then we can respond to the request from staff for any direction. So Mr. Robick, did you hand a card for this comment in my peripheral vision, or?
Yes, he did.
I did indeed. Todd, I really want to compliment you for your detailed questions. I love it when board members are really engaged like you are, so thank you very much. It's no surprise that robust water weather years temporarily stabilized groundwater levels. Natural recharge in the deep aquifer is achieved by percolated precipitation in the foothills. Coupled with reduced groundwater demand by regional surface water users, we enjoy a modest improvement in Tuscan aquifer conditions. but significant dry period demand reduction in the region is required if our goal is to prevent persistent depressurization of the Lower Tuscan Aquifer. The annual report mentions, quote, at the Vinus subbasin, GSAs acknowledge and will address the three recommended corrective actions listed on DWR's GSP determination letter. DWR recommended not three, but six corrective actions that contain detailed recommendations. The abbreviated actions mentioned in the report lack the details. These details should be included in the report. The DWR determination letter advises the GSAs should address the following items. Provide additional information in the GSP outlining the location and extent of contamination plumes, the notorious TCE and solvent contaminations from the Victor II company and the dry cleaners and other locations. Identifying the constituents that are being monitored under various programs and thoroughly describing ongoing remediation efforts within the subbasin. Evaluate whether groundwater management actions, including production and or replenishment under the jurisdiction of the GSAs, may influence the migration of these contamination plumes. The GSA should revise the definition of undesirable results and language pertaining to significant and unreasonable lowering of groundwater level to remove the dry year condition, or discuss how extractions and recharge will be managed as necessary. GSA should provide information on impacts to domestic wells during projected conditions where minimum thresholds are exceeded, but undesirable results do not occur. And also quantify domestic wells that will be impacted by the proposed minimum threshold. Provide additional information on criteria used to identify undesirable results. Provide sufficient information regarding criteria used to identify significant and unreasonable conditions, undesirable results. Furthermore, the GSA should evaluate the impacts of proposed minimum thresholds on other beneficial uses and users, such as environmental users and uses. These recommendations should be addressed as soon as possible when the data exists, and not wait until the periodic evaluation of the GSP, which is due in 2027. And as you know, I'm very concerned about environmental users and uses. And I was disturbed that the annual report makes no mention of groundwater dependent ecosystems or the environment. The report mentions that notable progress on the Lindo Channel surface water recharge implementation project have been achieved. I visit the location of this proposed project several times a week, and I have expressed interest in keeping informed on the project. And I sent a letter to comments last night or this morning, so I'm hoping that tonight I can get an answer on what are the details of the progress on the Lindo Channel recharge project.
Great. Thank you for your comment. Some of your comments referred to the the areas of three versus six, and that has been addressed, as Kelly discussed.
When was that addressed?
She uploaded that. She made that comment earlier. Kelly, just for the purpose of clarity, could you repeat what you had said about adjusting?
Yeah, no problem. It was just in the beginning comments. We caught that a couple days ago, and so we've been working on the changes. The updated language is now reflected in a new report, which is posted to the DWR portal today, and it should be on the Vinda GSA website for your pleasure viewing tomorrow.
So it wasn't available. Well, I noticed that I got an email this morning that the agenda had been, that the report had been revised. But how many pages are in the report? Like 120 or something? I searched through it, and without having a clear idea of what got revised, I didn't have the patience to go through the whole thing again. But I appreciate if it was a response to my concern that you mentioned only three when there were six.
Yeah, we got that a couple.
Response to my query, I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, that was something we caught a couple of days ago. We've just been working on the changes, and that was really the only substantial change. So that was on the ES7 and I believe page 19 or something like that. But here's a hard copy if you'd like to see what it looks like.
I'll be happy within, you're saying it will be available? It's not available
yet? It's available on the DWR portal at the moment, and it will be posted by Dylan tomorrow morning on the GSA website.
I'll make sure to look at it and see if the details are there that I'm asking for.
Jim, we'll have Dylan send you an email link when it's on there, on the GSA website too.
Great, thank you. Are there any other comments? Seeing none, I'll just mention two things that I kind of distilled from our conversation that are micros yet macros at the same time. One of them was Vice Chair Royer's comment about the way that we've kind of been talking about the 2000 span and the 475,000. So I think that might be a direction on for that. And the other thing, again, this probably isn't in the report, but just that idea of the full bathtub kind of relates to that number too, about where we actually stand. So when we're talking about things, we can just be, put in proper context, the comments like that. So anyway, were there any other items of direction or feedback that I didn't mention? Did we give you all that you need, Cammy? And or Kelly and or Christina and or?
Yes, I think this was an informational item.
So yeah, it was informational. It did ask. It did say that, accept as information and provide direction to staff as appropriate. So I just wanted to make sure I think we were appropriate, and I just wanted to make sure we provided the direction you needed. So,
I know I've asked this question before. I mean, we will now send this report to Department of Water Resources, correct? They'll look it over. Is there a chance they'll say, hey, you didn't address this. You didn't address, ecosystem. You didn't address whatever, or that they just take it and read it and say thank you?
Yeah, so up until this point, I think they've been pretty busy with GSP review. Those have all been now reviewed. And so we did get some indication from DWR that they will be starting to review these 2023 water year annual reports. What type of feedback is gonna come? We're not quite sure yet, but specifically with the GDE aspect, that's not necessarily a requirement for these annual reports. So it's really important to sort of say, okay, these are reports that meet a specific, requirement under the law. And then there are other things that we do as well. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay. But we feel we've complied with the law and addressed all the issues we're supposed to, we're required to address in this report.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Perfect. So with
Jeff and Eddie, thank you. Nice work.
And you may want to stay around just a couple minutes because there may be a question again in the dry with this. There's a part about the dry wells and in the well report. And so just in case something comes up, thanks. Appreciate it. So 7.1 is the this was submitted in writing, but I don't know if there's anything that you all want to say about it. Just because, again, we've had just to summarize what's in it or anything, any point based on our discussions.
Thank you, Chair Tuchinski. I don't have anything specific to say about the report. This is the quarterly report that the Department of Public Health Division of Environmental Health puts together quarterly. I think in the past we have talked about providing it to you for your review and information. So if there are specific questions about the report, I think between Kelly and I could probably answer them. So if there is anything specific, it does have a summary in there of well permit applications. I'm not sure what page it's on. Well permit applications that did have to go through review by the GSA in order to be issued the large diameter agricultural wells. And just as a reminder, the GSA does review those applications in compliance with one of the executive orders, which is now law. And Kelly does that review on behalf of the GSA. And so she can tell you the details of what she looks for in those applications.
Great. What I just noticed, just in the big picture thing, is it seems like we're 2024, we're on the pace of 2023, which was significantly lower than a lot of the other years. So I didn't see anything that alarm belled me. And then there was a reference of only a couple dry wells that were reported according to this. So again, going back to that dry well discussion, that's what I gleaned from reading this earlier. Did I take the big takeaways from this correctly, or is there something I've missed?
I think that sounds about right if you're looking at, you know, the small and the large as well. One thing that's important to note is that this report is only reflecting the dry wells that were reported directly to environmental health. And the only reason those would be reported is if they're applying for a new well. And so, and then they have a checkbox that they can say, is this a result of a drought condition or a dry well that you're having as a replacement? So it's a very small subset of what else might be happening out there. But in terms of calls to our office this year, you know, versus the few drought years, I think I've had 5 or 6. And on the DWR dry well website, I would say that there's maybe 2 or 3 there. So it's a big reduction, actually. As you would expect coming out of a drought and coming into a wet year. Some of the things that we've seen too is that it could be a result of, you know, an old well. So maybe the construction is one of the factors there and caving in versus really having it impacted by groundwater levels, but it's hard to say until you kind of dig into the details of that, but something else to ponder with that.
Great, thank you. Are there any other, do we have any public comment on this? I thought I saw a card come to you.
Yes, Jim Brobeck.
Great, 3 minutes, Mr. Brobeck, thank you.
Butte County is blessed with a plethora of water management professionals and elected officials that are concerned about proper water management. A little while ago, Jeff Davids was talking about the different levels of perforations in wells. I have presented to this body more than once some of the results that were revealed in the USGS Groundwater Atlas report that talked about what happened in the San Joaquin Valley, where wells that were drilled into the pressurized portion of the aquifer but had perforations all the way up into the water table, the shallow portions above the aquitards. They have perforations all the way up and down so that they could capture water from all the different areas. But once the lower portion was depressurized, you can imagine what happened in the upper layers in the water table. One large diameter well could drain 3 square miles of natural downward percolation through the aquitard. One well. Tehama County has produced an ordinance that prevents large diameter wells from having perforations in the upper portion. I think that our water commission, our technical advisory committee, our supervisor, and our groundwater sustainability agencies, all 3 of them, or 5 of them, or 10 of them, or however we want to say here in the county, have the ability to recognize this and provide input to prevent this from continuing to occur here, because there already are a lot of wells that are inappropriately perforated at multiple levels. But we can't allow this to continue as the lower Tuscan aquifer is depressurized by regional demand on the aquifer, not just in Butte County, but across the river. The cumulative depressurization of the aquifer is going to create leakage of the water table through these multiple perforations. And I think we have a role to play in preventing that. And I see nothing in this report that talks about depth of wells or perforations. We need that information. We need to get a handle on it and be educated on it and take advantage of the professionals who know that this is a potential problem. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Any other comments before we, oh, go ahead, please, Vice Chair.
Yeah, I've been seeing that the sewer tie-in from Paradise down the Skyway is proceeding. Has there been any continued or additional conversation about the idea of also putting in a water line at the same time?
I think the discussion for additional water supplies into Vina will be part of some of the projects that we're working on. That is actually the water supply project is one of the projects that the county will be managing. And in that, there will be options or a discussion of various options of potential water sources, anything from maybe perhaps the Miocene, Table A water. And if PAID comes into that discussion again, then that would be the time for that.
I just hate to see that get constructed and then afterwards say, oh, gee, we should put in a tie-in as well. Seems like it would be an opportune moment if we were to do it. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so we are going to be adjourning to closed session. First, are there any board disqualifications?
Oh, just before you do, Chair Tuchinski, yes. I just wanted to add, and Christina had sent me a text earlier as a reminder, and it might even answer one of Jim's questions, is that we now have fully executed grant agreements with DWR. We've been waiting for that. I know you guys have been approving contracts and things. The county, the Board of Supervisors has been approving subrecipient agreements. So everything is really getting started and kicked off. We now have Dylan as a GSA program manager. We have also retained additional staff. We have Becky, who's our project coordinator, working with Christina, as well as an admin analyst that will help with the processing of invoices and all of the meeting all of the grant requirements. And now that we have, there are now seven of us in the Department of Water and Resource Conservation to move these projects forward. And I know Jim was wondering about the initiation of the Lindo Channel project. That is part of those projects that will be getting initiated. We'll be creating a pretty robust, I was trying not to use that word, but a robust outreach program that will involve stakeholders. And so things are, we're getting the ball rolling, and in the coming months and over the next 2 years, just we'll be getting these projects done. As you know, the projects need to be completed exactly almost 2 years from now. So time is of the essence, and we will be starting these projects. So thank you.
Great, thank you. All right, going back to the next item up for bids, which is going to be the closed session. Were there any public comments for a closed session, Linda? Okay, and there are no disqualifications. So with that, we'll recess to closed session, and then we'll return for the closed session announcement. So if folks are really excited, they can stay for us to come back. Otherwise, we'll be announcing it publicly, and it'll be in the minutes. Thank you.